This podcast is offered by Jikoji Zen Center on the web at jikoji.org. Our programs are made possible by donations from people like you.
Can you raise your hand if it's your first time here, your first time with us? Wow, that's most of us. That's amazing. Fantastic. Well, thank you for being here. I hit record. Yeah, I know. I made a big to-do about it, too.
It's recording.
Yeah, it's recording. Yeah, yeah. Everybody must know that I usually forget. I was always trying to remind the teacher. Did you push your question? Well, welcome, everyone, to Jikoji, and especially a big welcome if it's your first time. It's really such a special place here, and I know it's also sometimes hard to find your first time, too. Where is it? And then the closer you get, feels like the further away you are, you know, your phone stops working. And then you maybe have to turn around once or twice or maybe three times to find it. And then you finally got here and made your way down our very long driveway and bumped and weaved your way finally here. Really, really here. Just here. Yeah. So I wanted to do a little bit of a more traditional bit of a talk and talk about a koan, talk about one of our traditional teaching stories. I like to use koans a lot in my teaching. And this one's a really famous one from a collection of koans called the Blue Cliff Record. And it's case number 11. And it's called Obaku's Gobblers of Drakes. Obaku's Gobblers of Drakes. Yeah. And it goes like this. Obaku, instructing the community, said, "All of you people are gobblers of drakes. If you go around traveling this way, where will you have today? Do you know that there are no teachers of Zen in all of China?" At that time, a monk came forward and said, "What about those in all those various places who teach and order around followers and lead communities?" Obaku replied, "I did not say there's no Zen. I just said there are no teachers." That's our koan. Yeah, they're kind of mysterious stories. They tend to have this kind of enigmatic, mysterious quality about them where you feel like you can't quite get a hold on them at first glance. That's one of the telltale signs of a koan. But I was looking up this koan and I wanted to learn more about it. I like to take what we're talking about at the breakfast table when I'm in residence here. I like to take what we're talking about and I try and maybe make it into a talk. And so this came up, this phrase, "All of you gobblers of dregs." It's a really weird phrase in English. So if English isn't your first language and you're like, what? It's okay. It's very weird in English as well. So I wanted to look at what the original Chinese was. And so I wanted to go down this deep dive. And so, you know, I found the original and I was trying to go through it character by character and trying to translate it. So apparently Gobblers of Dregs is a very common English translation, but the original was something more like you're going after the wine in the bottom of somebody else's cup, something closer to that. Yeah, so that I found the original Chinese for this koan, and it's a kind of a litho, a picture of it. But I was asking my friends here if we could read it, and it's It's over 1,000 years old, so it's very difficult to read. And it doesn't really make sense, right? So it's hard to read. But I thought I would have you just read maybe the last lines and give us a little bit of the spirit of the poem in Chinese.
因为是文言文，所以我也不太会念，我努力念一下啊。最后那句还是能看懂的。他说：“谁的文言文更好？”就是“举黄
披
视众人
如
如等
诸
诸
人，
人，尽
尽是
是饮酒
糟
曹
汉，糟汉
曹汉凭
任
凭
凭
行
角。
脚。”
何
何
处
处
有
有
今
今
日？
日？
还
还
知
知
大
大
唐
唐
国
国
里无
国
禅
里
师
无禅
吗？
师吗？对，
时
有
有
僧
僧
出
出
云，
云，只
只
如
如
诸
诸
芳
芳
土
土里
里
众，
众，又作什么？
又作么声？
披云，不
不
到
到
无
无
禅，
禅，
只
只是
是
无
无
师。
师。
就最后这句话还比较简单，就是不到无禅，就是没有。说，不是说没有禅，只是无师，只是没有老师。
Meaning that there's indeed has Zen, but just no teachers.
That's right. There is indeed Zen, but there are no teachers. So I love this koan, but here I am up here teaching it. So how do we talk about that? That's a really interesting koan, right? But I love this line, you're gobblers of dregs. And so in English, the dregs are the what's left over. What's left over. And so I like to think of it as you're gobbling up what's in the bottom of the pot. You're scraping the pot for leftovers, you know? So what is this koan saying? It's saying, hey, there's no Zen teachers. And I thought that was really funny because that's my main occupation. Nenzan Sensei, my co-teacher here, and I, both of us are very cautious about titles, and we don't like anybody calling us sensei. I'll call her sensei, but we don't call ourselves teacher and sensei. And it's a kind of a funny little dance we do, So we just like to say teacher, resident teacher. It's a very simple title, very quiet, humble. I was thinking, why do we do this work? Why do I do this? What do I teach if there are no teachers of Zen, right? And I was just thinking, I like to practice in community. That's why I do this. I like to practice with you. And this is one of the ways I get to practice. So Nenzen and I get to practice with this community in this place that we love. And it's kind of as simple as that. Sometimes we need reminding of that. Sometimes we kind of can get lost in the details of it, but it's as simple as that. It puts us into close contact with all of you. Practicing together, learning about each other's struggles and pitfalls and growing together. It's really beautiful. And it reminds me of when I first became a teacher, and Zen teacher, a monk came up to me and said, "Oh, now you're a student." And I was like, "Oh, that's a really interesting thing to say. Aren't you supposed to be saying congratulations? Aren't you supposed to be applauding me?" He said, "Now you're a student." And then, so sometimes when I go and I say, "You gobblers of dregs," I know this story front to back. But wait, what does he mean by gobblers of dregs? If I'm going to teach this, I better go look up the original Chinese and be sure I know what I'm talking about. So I really become a student, right? It's bad enough I have my own fixed views and ideas I'm trying to get rid of. trying to grapple with that, but I'm also trying to see all of us. That's really being a student. So my first Zen teacher, he had this phrase. He would say, "Occupy where you stand." It's another kind of enigmatic phrase. A little doesn't quite make sense, but it does. Occupy where you stand. I think, where else could I be? But occupy where you stand. Really, be who you are where you are. That's not always easy. So his great teaching to me was occupy where you stand. So I started practicing Buddhism formally as a teenager, right about a time when my life got really chaotic and really hectic. And it was really painful. So I was searching for answers and I was searching for something that I thought would help me have peace and have clarity. But I also realized a lot of that energy was me reaching outside of myself and trying to be anywhere else and trying to be someone else. It was a good teaching for me, occupy where you stand. But it was a teaching he gave to me right before I left home for the first time. So I thought that was a really nice teaching. When I'm about to go walking, he said, "Think about your standing." So I moved from the Philadelphia area to coastal Washington State. So I think, and I currently live now part-time, very part-time here, and but most of the time in Baltimore now. In Baltimore, so where I have another community and a whole other life. So I feel like, oh, maybe I've always been doing this. And so now I'm going Baltimore to the Bay Area. But I moved from Philly to Washington State. And my life was really, really chaotic and painful, and it had gotten really abusive and bad, and so I had to leave. And so it's a very strange teaching. Occupy where you stand. Occupy where you stand. I was a teenager who I recently become deaf. I was having a health crisis, and my family was in the throes of addiction and dying and couldn't get out. So I found myself suddenly in Washington State, and I remember my second evening there. I step outside of the house I was staying at. I was 15 years old, and I looked up at the sky. Now, for a city boy to come out to a place like this and look up at the sky and to see all of those stars, I could actually see the Milky Way. I could actually see the band of stars, the concentration of stars, shooting stars, and all this stuff in this clarity of the night sky of rural Washington State. And my knees buckled. I was looking out when I was suddenly feeling this enormous thing hanging above me, or this enormity of life, and this enormity of the decision I just made. And I'd moved and left home at an early age, and I didn't know what I was doing. I still don't know what I'm doing. I didn't know what I was doing, and my knees buckled, literally. My knees started to go out from underneath me. And I slumped down on the ground and sat on the grass in the middle of the night. And all I could think was, occupy where you stand. Occupy where you stand. And I was like, I can't stand. I said, okay, well, then we can occupy where we sit, right? So, Kodo Sawaki is one of my great hero teachers. He's a monk that actually was one of the teachers that taught the founder of this temple. So it's really, really cool that we have a connection to this teacher, Kodo Sawaki. He was known as Homeless Kodo because he moved from temple to temple, never really settling in one place, just teaching anywhere he was called. He was like a He also said, I'm like a mountain mushroom. I just appear after the rain. I like that, you know? And so I feel like that too, because I'm very peripatetic. I move around a lot. I'm going from place to place a lot teaching. But when he was to take over their temple for their master, he felt uncomfortable taking the seat, you know? So he practiced from within. He just faced the wall with all the other monks. But it was also a deep teaching for that community because he was saying, okay, I'm not going to mind your practice. I'm not going to watch you. You have to watch you. You have to be in charge of yourselves now. Okay? It's up to us. It's time to occupy where we stand. Learning to stand up even when our knees buckle. Learning to respond to a world that's going to constantly be buckling our knees, right? That's what it is to be human, to be hit with addiction and loss and grief and joy and birth and death and being fired. You know, all of those things are part of what it is to be human. So we have to learn how to be fully intimate with our lives, fully in contact with ourselves, whatever position we are in. And taking that position is hard sometimes, but it's also really, really good practice, practicing that. Because that's what we need. We need you in your position, right? We need you holding your Dharma position in your life, being fully present, being fully you. So, me taking this position as teacher, it's also very weird. Because I'm also just practicing too. I feel like that. I'm just practicing. But right now, sometimes my practice looks like this. You know, sometimes I chant and put on the Buddha robe, but sometimes you chant and put on the baker's apron or the accountant hat or the Apple badge or whatever you wear. You know, that's your Buddha robe. Fully doing that completely. So what are we teaching them, right? And that's another phrase that Nenzen Sensei and I will repeat to each other, an old Zen phrase, selling water by the river. That's what it is to teach Zen. It's like standing next to the river, scooping up free cups of water and saying, you want to buy this? It's all here all the time for all of us. Yet somehow we have to package it and hold it up. That's what giving a Dharma talk is, right? And so Nenzan and I sit in our little rooms and we look out on these grounds and we look at this river. And we think, oh, selling water by the river. Here we are. So that's what he was saying in the koan. I didn't say there was no Zen, just there's no teachers of Zen. He was saying what we jokingly say is this job is a bit of a scam. If you start saying, I can teach Zen, you're probably wrong to begin with. You're probably scamming yourself too. So, all I can say, I think, is I enjoy practicing deeply with community. I like practicing when we do retreats here, when we get real quiet and we sit all day, day after day together. I like going on hikes in these hills and I like taking photos of the flowers and the slugs. This is what I like. It's a really beautiful place to practice this kind of quiet intimacy and listening, listening with our whole body and paying attention. That's what I like. Are you ready for that greater intimacy in your life? Is that what you want? Is that why you're here? Then, yeah. One of the things we can do is we can study Zen and follow these forms, and one of us will be the teacher, and then next, somebody else will be the teacher, and then somebody else down the line. And we take t our turns holding our position and doing our work. So, this great ancestor, Obaku, we call him in Japanese, but he's Huangbo, Huangpo in Chinese, I think. Yeah, something like that. Huangpo, he was famous, this guy. You gobblers of dreams. He was famous because he would shout at his community too. It was one of his signature moves. Ooh, we don't do as much shouting anymore. But Huangbo would shout at his community and do really strange things to kind of knock them off balance, make sure they were awake and paying attention. But it was also said that Huangbo was almost 7 feet tall. He was over 2 meters tall. And he had a pearl in the middle of his forehead. He had a lump, an auspicious lump in the middle of his forehead, a pearl. They would say also in some translations, he had a very fortunate forehead, a very fortunate head. And I had a Chinese grad school classmate once tell me I had a very fortunate shaved head after I first shaved my head to become a monk. I'm still not sure if that's a compliment or not to tell me I have a fortunate shaved head. Like Huang Bo, I have a big lump or something I'm not aware of. But Huang Bo, Master Obaku had this lump. And in some traditions, they say, you know, it's this kind of fortunate thing, this emanation almost of wisdom and an emanation of wisdom. And in other sources, it say he gained this lump. It was a callus from how many prostrations he would do to the ground. Yeah. So isn't that also an emanation of wisdom? Bowing down deeply to the ground, letting our forehead touch the ground, and raising everything else up just for a moment, taking a breath there and coming back. Isn't that an emanation of wisdom? Aren't they the same thing? To get down and bow low, as low as our body or our heart will allow us to in the moment, to get down and to bow. Do you know the Latin word? The Latin root for human, where it comes from. It comes from earth, the humus, the earth, the soil, the dirt. So the Latin word, the English word for human comes from dirt. To bow down and put our face down in the dirt. To be dirt. We get the word human just from that. We also get the word humility, humble. To be human is to be from the earth, is to be drawn down to it and to be in touch with our own nature, which is this thing. Right? So in Zen, we have these few figures, we have these towering figures like Master Obaku, 7 feet tall, even bigger than our monk in training, Jinho. But sometimes they weren't towering figures. Sometimes they were just little stories about little old nuns who were just sweeping the steps and were able to offer compassion or a turning word to one of their brothers or sisters, to offer a little bit of kindness or wisdom to each other along the way. Sometimes, yeah, they were larger than life figures leading communities saying, "You gobblers of dregs, don't follow me. Use the forms, master the forms, master this way. Be you, be an expression of yourself." So I love our tradition with all of these different voices, the subtle, the strange, the loud, the quiet. As long as they helped awaken others, it didn't matter. But yes, they sounded strange. These stories were strange. Because sometimes using our full self like this is strange. When the rest of society is not, the rest of society is maybe just focused on consuming and repeating and acting out the stories in their head or the stories in their parents' head for them. So Master Obaka was pointing us back at our own lives, saying, "Don't follow blindly. Go deep into your life where the wisdom is. Be intimate with your life. Not the scraps and leftovers for of others. Not chasing what's in the bottom of somebody else's pot for you." We're reaching for that cup, that pot, because we're trying to fill ourselves up. We are trying to be the best parent we can be. We're trying to be the best partner we can be. We're trying to be the best person at work we can be. And sometimes all of that trying to be the best person is getting in the way of actually being that person. Being in intimate contact with our life instead of the story of our life. So we try and step out of the small perspective into a greater, larger perspective about ourselves. And there's a point for many of us where we kind of have to face that story or face that thing about ourselves, and we have to drop it, and we have to learn to drop the expectations and kind of let ourselves happen in a really radical, kind of backwards way. Kind of forge our own path. We recently, I had somebody come looking for spiritual direction who, after 25 years was being let go from his job. And he knew it was coming, and he woke up one morning and he was going, "Well, it's tomorrow. It's finally here. That's the next day." And he woke up in a sweat, and it's like, "I don't know what to do with myself. I don't know what to do with my life." And so he came here and we talked about it, and we talked about it, and we had tea and we had a walk. And as we walked around, we started talking about this other koan, the 100-foot pole koan. And it says something like, "Oh, your life is like this. You suddenly find yourself atop, standing atop a 100-foot pole. What do?" And the answer to the koan is, "I step off." But of course, when you're thrust with this story, you say, "Ah, I can't do that. Ah, you know, it's too high, it's too much. It's too loud, it's too all the time." Whatever it is for us that's keeping us from stepping into our life, that's stepping into our life in a full way. Because every step we take is a 100-foot pole, right? Every step is that, whether we think it is or not. So as we were talking about this story, that man really felt that. "I'm on this pole. Where's that path?" And what he said to me is, he said, "The path is no longer clear. I think that's the true path." And I thought, yeah, that's really good. The path was so clear, and now he's in the forest. Now the true path is beginning for him. What to do next? What's his new identity? Who's he going to be after this job? Facing it all at once. So, you gobblers of dregs, as Mizumi Roshi would say, he would say, Have good trust in yourself, not the one that you think you should be, but the one you are. I like that a lot. I like that a lot. Don't miss it. Don't miss your life, you know. Don't miss the chamomile soap. Yeah. Don't miss the Stellar's Jays playing, fighting, and flirting in the trees. Don't miss it. Don't miss the slugs. Don't miss the tea and the cookies and each other, okay? Don't miss yourselves because we need you. We need you. Exactly you. So, all the way down through all of these stories, all of these ancestors, all the way down to us now. And I was thinking, oh, well, Master Hubaku, so tall, so big, so towering, with a forehead that sheen from wisdom or bowing or something, But that's Master Hubaku. What about Osho? As the jazz great Thelonious Monk once said, a genius is the one who is most like himself. So I had to release that story. I had to release that story. My knees had to buckle all the way. I had to go all the way down to the ground so that I could stand back up and be a person at 15, at 16. It's time to stand up. That's what I had to do. It's okay. I'm still doing that. I do that a little bit every day, standing up like that. But I had to let go of a bit of a story. I had to let my, just like that man who's walking into the path and there's no path, I had to let my parents be who I didn't deserve. I had to let my family be who I didn't deserve. So I could draw a line and I could start there, So I could start my life and stand up. But all of the figures I love, that I know that I really love in Zen. Master Obaku sure is one of them, but Kweka, the second ancestor, had one arm. Sen Kan, the third ancestor, was a leper. Kuei-Nung, the sixth ancestor, was an illiterate woodcarver. It's okay to be deaf. It's okay to be mute, right? It's okay to be fully ocean. So there are no teachers of Zen. There's Zen. There's no teachers of Zen. They're just people like us coming together, trying to figure it out for themselves, for each other. And in that process, if they're connected with that, then they're able to be good, authentic teachers. If it comes from a good, authentic place in themselves, it will reach others. I hope this reached you. Thank you. Yeah, I think we have a little bit of time for.
Thank you for listening to this podcast offered by Jokoji Zen Center. Our Dharma talks are offered free of charge, and this is made possible by the donations we receive. Your support helps us to continue to offer the Dharma. For more information about Jokoji, please visit us on the web at jokoji.org.